Blog Talk Radio.
Not sure what happened to our opening song there. We decided not
Let's
to play.
Get it started.
Here we go.
In here.
And the bass keeps running, running, and 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 running, running, and
in this context, there's no disrespect. So when I bust my rhyme, you break your neck. We got 5 minutes for us to disconnect from all intellect and let the rhythm affect. To lose the inhibition, follow your
parental guidance is suggested.
All right, all right, all right. Here we go with another show. Welcome to Distracted with Bikerson Gibbs. Although tonight it's going to be Distracted with Bikerson because Daryl's not feeling so well tonight. He's not able to join us, and I'm hoping he feels well soon. And well, hopefully he gets a little bit better here quickly. I don't know what's going on. I literally just learned that he's not feeling well just a couple of minutes ago. I talked to him a couple hours ago, and he seemed to be doing all right at that time. So, again, we'll see. If you are joining us on Blog Talk Radio, you're listening to the Blog Talk Radio Network. Thank you for being here. To the best of my knowledge, I did an audio-video test literally minutes before the show. So, to the best of my knowledge, the audio and the video are actually up and running now on our video live streams. I'm looking at the audio meter here on the switchboard, and well, it's giving me green bars indicating that I've got audio. So that's a good sign. So if you want to join us on the video stream, you can catch that on X or Twitter, whatever you prefer to call it. I know a lot of people still I'll call it Twitter. It's kind of like the Sears Tower in Chicago. It's technically the Willis Tower now, has been for quite some time, but nobody actually calls it the Willis Tower. Everybody refers to it as the Sears Tower because, well, it's kind of iconic. You can also find us on YouTube. We have our own YouTube page. It is the Distracted with Bikerson Gibbs YouTube page. And folks, I tell you what, you can help us out a lot. Even if you're not big on watching things on YouTube, please go to our channel and give us a quick subscribe, maybe watch a video or two, give us a thumbs up here and there to help us get some of our content distributed out, because we are trying to build that page up to the point that we can hit monetization. We actually would like to earn a buck or two anyway off of this show, if possible. So this is a lot more difficult running this by myself. I am used to having a sidekick on the show. I'm not typically a go-it-alone type of broadcaster. But you know what? We're gonna have fun anyway. We've got a lot of things to talk about. Of course, indictment palooza continues, or it looks like it's going to continue. Only this time, it's not Trump they're going after. It looks like they are set to indict Hunter Biden on a federal gun charge. Now, a lot of people on the right are seeing this as a win. A lot of people on the right are seeing this as not so much of a win because, well, there's probably that feeling that, okay, it's a gun charge. In light of all the things that have been exposed about the Hunter Biden and the big guy scandal, pretty much, you know, an old gun charge, which amounted to him, I believe, you know, hiding a gun in a garbage can that the Secret Service kind of did away with. That's pretty much the smallest charge that he would be looking at, you know, next to like the tax evasion that they turned into a misdemeanor. And I think we're all in agreement here that if you or I committed $6 million worth of tax evasion, we probably wouldn't get a misdemeanor, you know, probation only plea deal offered to us. That was definitely a sweetheart deal, even though it did get shut down. But it continues. They're talking about here in the next couple, 3 weeks or so, I believe they said by the end of the month, they're looking to indict him on the gun charge. Maybe if the pressure keeps up, we'll start seeing other indictments. I got to tell you, though, I'm not real happy that our political state has devolved to where it is, to where each side is basically arresting the other, you know, the members of the opposition. That's not the kind of politics we have come to enjoy in this country, at least not over the span of my lifetime. You know, it's not a good thing, and it shows the state of tribalism. And I know that if you go back and you look at some of the voting histories from some of the old bills, you go back to the 70s and 80s, there was a lot of bipartisan voting, believe it or not. You know, the Republicans and the Democrats have always kind of been like the Hatfields and McCoys to a certain extent. But there was a lot of issues that they would come together on. People would vote across the aisle. So you saw a lot of things passed, that a lot of legislation would get passed that had votes. It might be primarily Republicans, and then a few Democrats would sign on, and vice versa. And when you look at the number, I wish I had the chart to put up on the screen here, but I just didn't have that much time to prepare for the show. When you look at the chart, though, you see this decline in bipartisan voting. It got smaller in the 90s, got even smaller in the early 2000s, to the point that now it's just non-existent. Non-existent. It just, you don't see it. Democrats vote with Democrats, Republicans vote with Republicans, and nobody reaches across the aisle on pretty much anything unless it involves extending the Patriot Act, in which case there was absolutely no talk about that. We were in the middle of indicting Donald Trump, or not indicting, excuse me, impeaching. You know, back before he was getting indicted, he was getting impeached. So as the Democrats and the Republicans are going toe-to-toe on national television every day, on social media and everywhere else, these people just, you know, couldn't agree on the color of sight, you know. And they're just going back and forth constantly, right? Yet, quietly, as everyone's going back and forth on the internet and on the airwaves of TV and radio, they got together and they voted to extend, bipartisan vote, voted to extend the Patriot Act. And yeah, how many headlines did you see about that? Probably none. That's why there are shows like this one, Distracted, where we talk about all the news that isn't news for whatever reason. And so we're going to continue to move forward with reading on the news that's not news for some reason. And, of course, we usually open up the phone lines to guest callers around 7:15. But being that I don't have Daryl here to help kick in and give me some extra content, I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines now. So if you do want to call in with a comment, with a question on anything that that's being talked about here, that number is 516-387-1733, and I will read it off again, 516-387-1733. Once you call in and you can hear the radio show over your phone, just pull up your dial pad and hit the number one. That sends me a signal to the switchboard, lets me know that you have something that you'd like to say. And at that point, I'll bring you on air and we'll talk about it, because that's what we're here for. We're here to talk about it. We're here to talk about quite a few things. So I'm going to go ahead and lead off tonight with mischief in Michigan. All right. What's going on in Michigan that is newsworthy but not being talked about? Well, I'll tell you. They're up in Muskegon, the Muskegon, Michigan. That's over there in the lower part of Michigan. And I would say Muskegon is kind of, I'd say northwest, kind of northwest Michigan up there along maybe north central. I've been there. I just didn't look at it on a map once I got there. But it's, well, it's probably about an hour north of like Grand Haven area. So not too far. I'd say more north, more like central, west central Michigan would probably be a good description. Anyway, with all that aside, up there in Muskegon, there was a county clerk that decided to take a look into some irregularities. They noticed a whole lot of ballots that seemed to have inconsistent signatures, didn't match the registration, etc. In some cases, there were addresses that were invalid addresses. They were not actual addresses that were listed on the ballots. What was it? Oh, others were missing signatures, various things like that, missing signatures, missing the address, just all sorts of kind of irregularities. And we're not talking about one or two. We're not talking about 10 or 20. I believe for Muskegon, if I'm not mistaken, it was like over 1,000 ballots that the county clerk found odd. And so they noticed that all those ballots had been brought in by a company that had a local office there in Muskegon under the name of GBI Strategies. And these were brought in bulk numbers by agents from GBI Strategies, okay? And so they referred an investigation to the local police department. So the local police department got involved, and they brought in someone who was turning these ballots in for an interview. And it was a female, from what I believe, from what I remember. And she indicated that, yes, she worked for GBI, that she was involved with going around and going to places where people may have trouble filling out ballots on their own, ballot harvesting, essentially. And she did mention that she was getting paid $1,150 a week in order to run this Muskegon office for GBI. Well, she also indicated that there were canvassers that worked under her management that were getting paid, I believe it was $9 an hour, in order to go out and canvass neighborhoods and find people who wanted assistance, we'll say, with getting their mail-in ballot, you know, filled out and turned in. And so a little bit more investigation, they figured out that there were multiple offices in Michigan for GBI Strategies. They had several additional offices, right? And so they ended up, they got all their information together from everything they could gather there in Muskegon, and then they then referred the investigation over to the Michigan State Police to follow up on the other office locations scattered around Michigan. So now the state police take the ball, right? Michigan State Police now have the ball. They're investigating these this large number of ballots that have all sorts of inconsistencies, missing signatures not matching, invalid addresses, no address given. And to make a long story short, as the state police got involved, they realized that the number of mail-in ballots that were, shall we say, compromised or questionable, suspicious, was now over 10,000. And we're just talking about the state of Michigan. So with over 10,000 ballots being of questionable character, the Michigan State Police then went and turned their findings over to the FBI because their investigation revealed that GBI had offices all around the country, including some key locations like New York City, Philadelphia, Atlanta, just to name a few. And they felt like this was something larger. They essentially, when they turned this over to the FBI, they said, okay, what we've got and the reason we're turning this over to you is our findings seem to indicate there may be a nationwide voter fraud ring that's going on involving this company, GBI. Well, a little bit more investigation. They find out that GBI is getting a lot of funding from the DNC itself, as well as some of the big-time donors to the DNC, organizations closely tied to the DNC, etc. And when did this happen? Believe it or not, this goes all the way back to 2020. The FBI, prior to the 2020 election, was given all this information showing that there was a nationwide voter fraud scheme going on at the heels of GBI strategies. And of course, I'm sure you saw all the headlines on the news about it, right? Of course you didn't. Here it is, it's 2023. We're just now starting to hear about this, and only if you're listening in the right places to places that would report that. I believe the Gateway Pundit has talked about this story, and there's another website out there called Just the News. That's where I picked the story up from. And, we're just now talking about that for some reason. And it makes you wonder, what is it that the FBI has been doing with that particular investigation? Why haven't we heard anything about it? Why, when there were all the challenges to the 2020 election, and I'm not saying, don't get me wrong, I am not saying that the 2020 election was rigged. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm not saying that Donald Trump did win. I'm not saying he didn't win. What I am saying is what we've heard over and over since 2020 is that any claim of election fraud is baseless and that there's no evidence to support it. Now, if you're a guy like me, you know that's not true. It never was. The claims never were baseless. That was something that the mainstream media, kept pounding into everyone's head. Baseless claims, unfounded claims, no evidence. We heard that over and over every day. And the problem is there actually was evidence, especially in some of the key swing states. There actually was evidence something was amiss. And I did things like I would go in, I would watch election commission hearings in some of these states, like Michigan, Wisconsin. I would actually watch those live to actually hear the testimony of the witnesses that were being called in. You had witnesses that were testifying all kinds of questionable things. We've all, at this point, if you're watching this show, you're probably not new to this. You know, the video of, you know, several boxes of mail-in ballots being delivered to voting precincts that had closed for the night. All of a sudden at 2 a.m., you know, you had people bringing boxes of ballots in that were being counted after hours without witnesses present. That went on in some key areas, Fulton County, Georgia being one of them. And there was a lot of stuff like that going on in Wisconsin as well. witnesses to hand counts, you know, being turned away or moved to a distance that they couldn't actually see what was going on to verify if it was accurate or not. A lot of questions with the Dominion voting systems. I'm not saying yay or nay, whether any of that's true. I know questions were raised for sure. The problem is we just got on this frenzy of the media telling everyone that any claims of any wrongdoing were completely baseless and that there was no evidence. And the problem is they weren't baseless and there was evidence. And there was never an investigation. And of course, that brings us to the most horrific event in the history of the world, the J6 protests / riots, where essentially most of the protesters that were there, not the rioters, most of the protesters that were there were, of course, calling for a full investigation into the election. They wanted an audit. They wanted a thorough, complete audit to determine whether or not, especially in the key swing states, and especially in certain voting areas within those states, whether or not there was a lot of voter fraud going on. Because these races were ran with tight margins, and the outcome was questionable. You know, when someone goes into the night with a fairly large lead over someone, and then all of a sudden, between 2 and 3 a.m., all of a sudden they lose the lead, and their opponent wins by a narrow margin. That's questionable. That's going to make anybody suspicious. And if there wasn't anything of this, if there was no foul play, then why were we not investigating it fully? Why, I would, if someone was accusing me of doing something wrong, I would welcome the audit. I would be like, yeah, go ahead. Audit me. I have nothing to hide. Audit me, and you're going to find out that everything you tell me is true. But we didn't do that. Instead, we just cranked up the mainstream media to hammer in the narrative. There's nothing wrong with this election. It's the most secure election in the history of the world, apparently. Most secure election in the history of elections. And there's no way in hell it could have been rigged. There's no way in hell anything could be amiss with this election. And, well, that causes problems, you know. So, anyhow, if you have any questions, any comments, I'm going to take a look at the switchboard here, see if we have a caller lined up, and we got no callers at this time. I would definitely love to hear your opinion on some of these things that I talk about, but guest call in line 516-387-1733. I'm going to keep on moving through the items I've got here. We may end up ending this show a little bit early tonight. Without Daryl, I can't imagine listening to me ramble on for 2 hours. I'm sure if you talk to my wife, she would probably describe that as the literal version of hell, having to listen to me ramble on about anything for 2 hours, politics, motorcycles, cartoons, you name it. So that was our Mischief in Michigan portion. I am a one-man show tonight, so I'm not really able to go in and monitor any of the chats that are going on. I will try to take a quick look here just to see if we have anybody that's jumped in. If you are tuned in over the Blog Talk Radio website, there is a chat feature on the website that you can jump in and use. And yep, nope, just me in there. Definitely a slow man. All right, so what was our next topic? Oh, yeah, uranium. Uranium inflation. If you've been following this show since we started here, this is only our fourth episode. We talked about the coup in Niger. And we talked about the fact that there are people who, I should say, nations that have been exploiting the countries in Africa for quite some time on their resources, the United States included. And, well, Africa's tired of it. They're tired of being poor. They've essentially described themselves as being colonized by the U.S. and France, while their resources essentially kind of more or less get robbed from them. And so they stepped in, they shut it down, there was a coup, they overthrew the government in Niger that was working with French and American officials and seemingly giving away all their resources. They said no more, no more. These resources, they belong to Africa, and Africa is going to get the profits off of these resources. And so, again, if you've listened to the show before, 41 African nations signed into military agreements with Russia in exchange for Russia saying that, yeah, you know what, we'll work with you on your uranium deal. We'll give you a fair market share, as were, you know, the U.S. and France were not. They were trying to just keep up the old system. So, yeah, they became allies of Russia now. 41 nations in Africa, allies of Russia, right, signed military agreements. Russia is now providing them with weapons and technology as they stand up and dig their heels in against mainly France is the one that seems to be most upset over this uranium deal. And that they just recently announced that they are upping their price on uranium pretty significantly. I'm not going to give an exact number because I've seen different numbers for how much they hiked their price, but seems like pretty hefty. And again, we're not talking about that. France, of course, did threaten to intervene if things were not reversed. And the general of the West African bloc military issued a public statement warning France and anybody else that any attempt at intervention would be treated as an act of war against Africa and that they would respond accordingly. And of course, we know that they'd be doing that now apparently with some Russian hardware that they're getting through this new agreement that they've got. So definitely a interesting developing situation there. A lot of those African nations also applying to the BRICS countries, the BRICS nations, to be an official part of BRICS. And if you're not aware of that whole deal with BRICS, BRICS is, of course, putting together a gold-backed currency that they intend to launch in 2024. And the BRICS nations will be trading for oil and other resources using the BRICS currency as the reserve currency instead of the U.S. dollar, which is the current global reserve currency. And none of this is getting talked about. Why is none of this getting talked about? These are major, major events. I mean, you're talking about the absolute destruction of the U.S. dollar if it gets knocked off the global reserve currency status. You're talking hyperinflation over here. It would just destroy it would destroy the economy here. Seems like it might be newsworthy, you know, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about everything else. Instead, we're running up indictments on everybody, most of which are probably going to be dismissed without anything being done. That seems to be the way it goes. Get the two sides fired up. Get everybody cheering for their team. And then nothing, right? And, you know, maybe there's an indictment or something, and, yeah, slap on the wrist, probation, it goes away. Or no one ever seems to really be held accountable in this dog and pony show. There just seems to be this eternal dog and pony show. Ted Cruz will get up. He'll make a bunch of really great remarks in Congress that are designed to fire up his fan base. And then nothing happens. Nobody backs him on anything he tries to do, from term limits to everything else. And it just seems like, well, one big game of distraction. I don't know. What do you think? Are we distracted? I feel like we are distracted. And that's why we're not talking about all these things. But without getting into that too far, I'm going to move us on into the next topic here, which is Arizona anti-theft measures. So it turns out Arizona is also a little bit concerned. The state of Arizona is also a little bit concerned about elections possibly being stolen. And so they have attempted to go back, and this goes back to the Katie Hobbs, Carrie Lake election debacle. Excuse me for a second here. I'm just going to take a second or two break. This goes back to the Katie Hobbs, Carrie Lake controversy. And if you're not familiar with that and everything that's gone into that, I don't care which party you follow or don't follow or whatever. This is concerning. You had Katie Hobbs, who was Secretary of State, running for governor. Secretary of State is in charge of handling elections. Now, I think it would be considered reasonable and prudent to use some legal terminology here. It would be considered reasonable and prudent if you are in charge of handling, overseeing elections, but you are running as a candidate in the election you are in charge of overseeing. It would only be reasonable and prudent to recuse yourself from the duties of carrying out that particular capacity and say, hey, since I am running in this election, I am going to appoint someone else to do the work of overseeing the election. Because I think that's a conflict of interest there, being that you're running for an elected position, yet you are in charge of handling the vote count and everything else, all the systems that are involved in it. So anyway, that was kind of the controversy there. Well, it's come to light there were a lot of, and I'm sure you've heard most of this. Well, actually, you probably haven't heard a whole lot of this on mainstream media. If you listen to mainstream media, all you've heard is that crazy conspiracy theorists are questioning the outcome of the Arizona governor's race. If you do listen to independent journalists, actual independent journalists, then you probably know that there were all kinds of voting complications that went on during the election, the governor's race out there, and that a lot of these voting problems seem to happen in Republican areas that would vote historically Republican. So in theory, people that would have voted for Carrie Lake instead of Katie Hobbs. You had machines that weren't working. You had machines that were working, but for some reason, ballots weren't being scanned. They weren't being accepted. There was a whole uproar there where the mail-in ballots that people, or the on-site ballots that people were scanning, only in those locations were the wrong size for some reason, and so the machine wouldn't read them, and people were being redirected after they stood in a very long line to cast their vote there. They were being redirected to go turn their vote in to another place. You know, it was a lot of questionable things were happening, and there have been lawsuits filed, and a lot of the courts have been they've been rejecting a lot of these cases, but they finally have a judge that said, you know what, there does seem to be a lot of voting irregularities, and doing the signature verification on these mail-in ballots is absolutely essential in this case, and they do need to be compared not to the last race, not to previously used signatures. They need to be compared to the original signature on the original voter registration, because that's the only way you can verify. That's the whole purpose of the signature when you register to vote, is so that the signature on your ballot can be compared to your initial registration. Because some of these people may have stopped voting years ago. Someone may have figured that out. Someone may have taken their voting card in their place and started. They may have been voting for whoever for the last 3-4 election cycles, forging their signature. So for only verifying signatures according to the last election, well, then we're just verifying that whoever voted in the last election matches that signature. Again, lots of opportunity for people to come in and use and abuse that loophole there. So that's kind of looking up. At least you have the authorities taking a look into that whole situation. And who knows, maybe one of these days, the number I've got, was it something like 480,000 ballots are questionable in the Arizona governor's race. I think separation between the two was something like 12,000 votes or something like that. Very tight race. It doesn't take much fraud to completely change the outcome of a race like that, which is the whole purpose why people were basically demanding that there be an investigation into these voting tallies. All right, I'm just making a mess of my coffee here. So, again, the number to call in if you want to talk, 516-387-1733. Well, we're going to move on from there, and we're going to talk about mainstream masking now. Seems like there's a big push, and I know this has been getting talked about a lot, that it seems like the mask mandates are making their way back. And can I just say, I really wish Daryl was here. This show is absolutely not the same without Daryl. He's my sidekick. A lot more comedy, a lot more laughing when you get the two of us together. It's pretty dry when it's just me up here, especially without any people calling in. So I finally get one episode that's actually going live with audio on the video streaming, and I don't have my sidekick. Hopefully he's all right. But the mask mandates are coming, and even though, and this is where it gets interesting, we're going to venture into conspiracy theorist territory here, because I believe it was early last month, I think it was early August, that crazy, the king of all crazy conspiracy theorists, Alex Jones came out and said that he had basically an informer from the TSA, a whistleblower, if you will, saying that, hey, we just had this meeting. They're telling us that in mid-September, TSA and airport employees are going to be required to mask up again, and that by mid-October, that's going to go on to passengers, and that basically the mask mandates are making a comeback. And he went live with that, and of course, got the typical mainstream media reaction that you would expect. Alex is a crazy conspiracy theorist. But lo and behold, now here we are. We're right at the end of the first week of September. And what are you seeing? Well, first, very quietly, there were some colleges that started implementing the mask mandates again. And then very quietly, there were some public schools, high schools, elementaries, et cetera, that began implementing mask mandates for students again. There were even some schools, I know there was a couple in Kentucky, that have actually shut down in-person learning. They're going back to the Zoom classes because of the new COVID variant, BA.2.4.8, I don't know. Don't get me to lying. It's B something, and the number two is in there. There's also a name, the virulent variant or something like that. It frankly, at this point, it doesn't matter. And so now we got the schools closing their in-person learning. And then what happens? All of a sudden now we're starting to hear, oh, Metallica has canceled the concert. James Hetfield tested positive for COVID. Whoopi Goldberg is not on The View this week because Whoopi Goldberg has tested positive for COVID. And, of course, Joe Biden has announced, well, the White House has announced that Joe Biden will begin masking again whenever he makes public appearances, unless he's, you know, off somewhere by himself and would properly socially distance away from people. So remembering how fast we went from no events, no stadium size events to, okay, schools are closing. Okay, the whole country's locked down. That was a rather rapid progression back in 2020, you might recall. And it seems hauntingly familiar as we start to hear these little whispers of, oh, there's a few schools closing here and there. Oh, there's a few people that aren't going to appear on TV or in their concert because, you know, with COVID. It really seems like maybe Alex, maybe he wasn't so crazy. Maybe his prediction was spot on. I don't believe they'll actually go full-blown mask mandate like we saw in 2020 and 2021. Rather, I think it'll come out as guidance. It'll come out as guidelines, which I think will just further foster the division between people. So instead of telling everybody they have to, they'll say, well, you know, if you care about your grandmother, if you care about your neighbor's kids, right, care about your coworkers, you'll put this mask on. And what is that going to fuel? We already know. Half the people out there are going to be driving around in their car by themselves with two masks, a face shield, and mask over all their air conditioning, you know, air conditioner vents in the car with their windows up. And the other half of the people are going to say, I'm not buying this. I'm not going to do this again. And then, you know, the name calling will start. The, why aren't you wearing a mask? Why are you trying to kill me? And the other person's going to be like, well, why are you trying to take my freedom? The Hatfields and the McCoys again. What a perfect tribal way to lead us into the 2024 election cycle. As apparently late breaking news, it sounds like Trump's indictment in Georgia, it sounds like the trial down there, the prosecution is calling 150 witnesses, and they're expecting that the trial will take 4 months to complete, of course, with television coverage, so that we have a good 4 months of bashing Donald Trump and saying all sorts of bad things about him leading up to the election, you know, after he, you know, starts another trial the day before Super Tuesday in New York. I think it'll backfire. I think we're entering a period where essentially most people at this point, a majority of people in this country, views our government as being corrupt and criminal. And when people view the government as being corrupt, well, that's when outlaws become heroes. That's why T-shirts with Donald Trump's mugshot are selling like crazy. Donald Trump's an outlaw now. Multiple indictments, federal and multiple states. They're going to drag this into the election cycle. They're going to make him look bad on TV. And I mean, it's like trying to tell somebody in the South that Jesse James is a bad guy, you know, while he's in the midst of carrying out robberies he carried out. And I don't know if you know all the history there, but essentially during the recovery period following the Civil War, a lot of people in the South were very untrusting of the banking system that was being imposed upon them by the Union. And, well, more or less, when Jesse James and his gang went out and started robbing banks, folks looked at him as a hero. That's why Jesse James, even though he was an outlaw, was viewed as a hero. When people don't trust the system that's governing them, when they don't trust the government or the banking system, well, again, outlaws become heroes. And that's what's going to happen with Trump here. In my opinion, that's my belief. Not saying either way whether or not I support him, his agenda, or what I believe he may or may not be involved in. But I absolutely believe playing out all this court stuff live on television is going to absolutely backfire against the Democrats. I think he will literally get stronger every day. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they quit doing televised coverage probably after the first week or two, just because they realize, wow, this is a massive backfire. That's my thoughts on it. I'd love to hear yours. But yeah, moving on here, I think, wow, that's like all the topics I had tonight. See, these topics would take so much longer if I had Daryl here. Because Daryl would go off on one of his tirades. Hopefully we'd generate a caller or two. But folks, I got to tell you, I'm not a one-man show. I am not one to sit here and ramble on for 2 hours by myself. So with that being said, I'm actually getting ready here to wrap this show up. I do appreciate everybody for tuning in tonight. For those of you that are out there listening, those of you that are watching on video, thank you. Yeah, without my sidekick, let's give him some well wishes. Keep him in your prayers, your positive thoughts, and let's hope that Daryl's okay. And so with that, I'm going to go ahead and say goodnight, folks, and we will see you at the next one.